President Biden's son, Hunter, has been embroiled in controversy throughout his father's time in office and before. He has a history of substance abuse, has been scrutinized for business dealings with international firms in places like China and Ukraine, and he's facing criminal charges for tax violations and illegally possessing a firearm. A plea deal in the tax cases fell apart at the last minute just a few days ago. He's provided a target for Republican criticism against the president, rising to the level of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy floating the idea of an impeachment inquiry to investigate Biden family finances. A House Oversight Committee has already launched an investigation into Hunter Biden's alleged tax crimes. One of his former business partners, Devin Archer, met with the committee today behind closed doors. President Biden has stood by his son despite the negative spotlight his scandals have brought to the administration. We're learning more now about the investigations into Hunter Biden's activities and the politics surrounding them, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the controversies surrounding Hunter Biden? Do you think about these controversies? How do you think Congress should handle the investigation? What do you think of this plea deal that's, at least for now, delayed at best? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of multiple books, including Presidential Swing States, 3rd edition. David, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, and thank you to the audience for listening.
And we've got a lot of ground we can cover. David, let's start with the charges in this court case now. We had what looked like a plea deal done. The judge says, no, hold on. We don't know what's going to happen next there. Can you give us the background on those specific criminal charges against the president's son?
Well, the president's son has a variety of charges he faces, including illegal gun possession, questions regarding some drug possession, and a few other assorted ones. But for the core, I think the core issue, what we're really thinking about here, is something really fascinating, is that they reached out and negotiated a deal. That is the prosecution and his attorney. And rarely do we see a judge second guessing a plea deal. And what we saw happen last week was a judge that said, listen, the deal that was received here that you guys negotiated, I'm not sure this is appropriate, and wants to review it. So this is highly unusual in terms of what we're seeing, and where it's actually going to unfold at this point, because it's possible that a lot of other charges had been, let's say, thrown out or negotiated out that could involve some questions regarding, again, we don't know a whole scope of it, but they could also include some things in terms of tax fraud, because that's one of the other charges he was pleading to, some like minor, you know, tax evasion and so forth. So we don't know the full scope that could have been out there, but needless to say, a judge second guessing a negotiated plea is very unusual.
Now let's look at the investigation here. This was started by a U.S. attorney named David Weiss, a U.S. attorney in Delaware, appointed in the Trump administration, approved, got bipartisan support, and entered that office, initiated this investigation under the Trump administration. A lot of times these U.S. attorneys, they are asked to resign when a new administration comes in. The Justice Department says, nope, you stay, complete this investigation. I bring this up because there's accusations that David Weiss, the attorney here, was playing softball in the Hunter Biden case. What are your thoughts on his role in this investigation and the plea deal, now rejected, at least for now, plea deal we ended up with?
Well, first off, it is unusual for U.S. attorneys to stay on when administrations change, or at least when, let's say, there's a change of party. It was probably smart on the part of the Biden administration not to dismiss him and put somebody else in place. It was an effort to try to at least create some sense that there was any type of partisan activity going on. Having said that, there are allegations from some whistleblowers and from some individuals within the Department of Justice that were claiming that even though he carried on from the Trump administration, again, some allegations that perhaps the investigation received some political pressure, that he did softball it a little bit. And I think this is where, or perhaps maybe the judge's concern, although I'm not sure, but putting aside partisanship for a few minutes here, in terms of it. This may be a legitimate question for Congress to look into regarding whether or not there really was any kind of improper pressure that was placed upon the prosecutor. And on the face of it, it doesn't look like there was, but I think until that's completely answered, I think we're going to have a variety of questions from the judge and perhaps from a lot of people in Congress and maybe public opinion wondering how this deal got negotiated down to where it's relatively minor in terms of what he's being charged with and what he was going to plead to.
Talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University of Law at the University of Minnesota, looking at criminal charges against Hunter Biden, the president's son, a plea deal rejected by the judge, members of Congress, the House Republican majority also starting investigations. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about this? What do you want to see from Congress when it comes to investigating Hunter Biden and the Biden family finances? Is this something you want to see Congress spending time on or not? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, there have been accusations from Democrats in particular saying these Republican investigations in the House, it's just a political fishing expedition, an election year, President Biden running for re-election. On the other hand, as you were just pointing out, this is the sort of thing that Congress is there to do, to investigate the executive branch and make sure it isn't bending the rules on the behalf of favorite individuals, the president's family or otherwise. What would you hope for the best kind of investigation to come out of congressional committees, given all that?
Well, what you would hope is that, again, there would be a truly bipartisan effort to try to figure out what's going on in this case. One would hope that the Department of Justice would be forthcoming in terms of providing witnesses and any other information. I mean, it may turn out on this because there's an ongoing, at least until there's a plea deal, there's an ongoing legal case going on here. Some of this might not be able to take place in public, because, what if, for example, they're doing the investigation and the plea deal falls apart and we have to go to trial or something like that? Issues regarding what materials would be aired in public become problematic if there's going to be a trial going on in this situation here. But if I could take a step back,
sure.
If we can go back to really the 1970s, and it takes us back to when we had Archibald Cox, who was fired by Richard Nixon in the Saturday Night Massacre, who was trying to investigate Nixon in terms of what was going on in Watergate. We created this provision called a special prosecutor, which was supposed to be insulated from, let's say, presidential influence. And by the time we got to the inquiry into Bill Clinton, people soured on the idea of an independent prosecutor. The law expired, and we don't really have anything like that in place anymore. And the reason why I mention this is that take us back to the Trump era, take it back to now, to Biden right now with Hunter Biden, there's an ongoing problem that we discovered 50 years ago. How do we actually investigate possible criminality that involves the executive branch or people related to the executive branch? And it may be that we need to be rethinking whether or not there is some type of special prosecutor law or some other system set in place. Now, granted, with Nixon, it was about criminality within the executive branch. No one's making, at least at this point, any allegations of criminality within the Biden administration. But rarely, I can't think of a situation off the top of my head where we've got a close family member of the president being investigated by the Justice Department. And this raises potentially the same types of conflict of interest issues as investigating criminality within the executive branch. So I think what I would really love to see out of this is something broader in terms of, is there a better process or policy that we could put in place more permanently to address allegations of criminality, And so that we don't have this constant sort of partisan bickering that's going on here.
Yeah, you point toward a big difficulty in American government. You've got the Attorney General, who's the head of the Justice Department. They're appointed by the president, confirmed by the U.S. Senate. In a case where they have to investigate that president or people close to them, technically the president is still their boss. And it sounds like you're saying we haven't quite figured out a way to insulate them from that kind of potential for interference.
No, you're absolutely correct. And the whole idea of having the special prosecutor law when we had it is that that person would be appointed by a judicial panel and subject to presidential removal only for bad behavior. But otherwise, the president would have limited control and the special prosecutor would have pretty broad independence. And in an ideal world, of course, we would live in a world where we never have to worry about criminality within the executive branch, that everybody's beyond reproach and doing their job, you know. But unfortunately, we're all human, and things happen like that. And so we do need a better process. And I think the lesson that we're learning in the last 25 years, let's say since the Clinton administration, since the special prosecutor law expired, is that this very ad hoc approach may not be a satisfactory way of handling it. And we do need to go back and say, okay, what worked, what didn't work from the old special prosecutor law, can we improve it? And can we come up with a better system in terms of how we handle this?
We're talking to political scientist and law professor David Schultz about Hunter Biden, the politics of the criminal and congressional investigations into the president's son. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the way Republicans have handled the Hunter Biden situation? Do you want to see further investigations into his conduct? Are you ready for the case to wrap up and move on? Do you think this will be an issue for voters to think about? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Oh, hey, and what do you think of David's suggestion? Bring back some kind of really independent special prosecutor for situations like this. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, with us today to look at the legal and political implications of ongoing investigations into President Biden's son, Hunter. A plea deal fell apart last week in a criminal investigation. Congressional committees led by House Republicans looking into the matter as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller. Gene is with us in Milwaukee. Gene, hello.
Hello. I'd like to know why Hunter Biden is not part of the government. So why is Congress investigating him? Why not just a regular DA?
Gene, thanks for the call. Private citizen Hunter Biden with obviously prominent family connections. Why is this a job for Congress, David?
It's a job for Congress, I believe, because there are possible allegations that perhaps the president used his influence or, let us say, the machinery of government to try to either mitigate the investigation or in some way, shape, or form affect the investigation. And that I think that is the basis for what the Republicans are looking at. Now, should the Republicans be doing, or the House, I should say in general, be doing a, let's say, their own inquiry into illegal behavior of Hunter Biden? No. I think the nexus, the hook, if I could use that phrase there, is there something going on in terms of how a criminal investigation by the Biden administration, may have been compromised because it involved his son?
Thanks a lot for that call. Gene, we'll go to Deborah now in Winona, Minnesota. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I really don't care what Hunter Biden did. What he did does not affect the presidency. It doesn't affect the government. What I would like to see Republicans do is actually govern, do what they were elected to do, pass, you know, maybe do something about climate change and health care. That's all I have to say.
Deborah, thanks for the call. And there's a Politico article out there, David, with a lot of Republican members of Congress who seem to agree with Deborah, saying, yeah, we're not hearing much about Hunter Biden from our constituents. We're hearing about economy, the border, and crime and things like that. Your thoughts, David, putting on your political scientist hat now instead of your law professor hat, the political impact of all of this?
Yeah, this is an interesting question because One of my friends who works actually at Minnesota Public Radio used to use the phrase inside baseball. And it was a phrase that she used to say, these are the issues that people who are like the real political insiders or that very small percentage of the population truly care about. And polls are suggesting that's exactly the issue, is that if you, and again, these are polls, it's less my opinion, but if you're looking at public opinion polls at this point, the public is concerned about what? They're concerned about inflation. They're concerned about the economy. Republicans are concerned also about a range of issues that might include also abortion, et cetera, et cetera. So this may be an issue that the political insiders, those within Washington, D.C., find really intriguing. But right now, it does not look like it's really generating a lot of public interest or public support. At the same time, and I was actually giving a talk this morning about this, is someone asked me a very similar question, and I said that this person said, well, isn't this on parity with investigations into Trump? And I said, even if it were, Trump so much consumes the news cycle that it's not the Hunter Biden story is just not the main story for many people. And if Republicans are thinking that this is going to be the way of taking the focus away off of Donald Trump and his legal problems or other issues, again, the polls are not suggesting that that's a good bet.
Thanks again for that call, Deborah. A lot of the way our politics seems to work these days, David, is that there are stretches, especially coming into a primary election season, where the interests of the base, the hardcore members, supporters of a party who are definitely going to come out and vote in a primary, their issues can matter a lot. Could this be part of what's driving interest in the Hunter Biden story, in this case, the Republican base, who may feel very strongly about this?
I think you're absolutely correct in that situation here. I'm going to even narrow it. Again, if the polls are correct, the base cares about it. But even among the base, if you were to ask them and say, okay, rank order the issues that you think are most important to you, this probably, even among important issues, probably doesn't come in first, second, or third, or fourth. And so even among important issues, it's a lesser ranked type of question. But there's no question that probably for the talk radio, for the social media, for the hardcore base, this is consuming a lot of their chatter at this point. And this is probably what's generating in part the congressional interest in terms of talking about it.
We've heard House Speaker Kevin McCarthy float the idea that, hey, maybe we need an impeachment inquiry to look into the Biden family's financial dealings. He seems to have dialed that back a little bit. Implications from some members of his caucus that they're worried, oh, maybe if we keep looking, we'll find that some money went to then Vice President Biden at some point. What do you think of the notion of an impeachment inquiry to dig further into these issues and claims?
Well, first off, I'm going to bet a quarter with any listeners out there. And my bet is going to be that there'll be an impeachment inquiry and there'll be an effort to try to impeach Joe Biden, simply because in sort of our tit for tat political world, I think many members of Congress, Republicans in Congress, would like to be able to have an impeachment hanging over Joe Biden going into 2024. And if they can get the votes to actually get an impeachment vote and then force the Democratic-controlled Senate to have to do something next year. So regardless of the merits, and again, and you'll notice how I'm saying here is that I don't know where the investigation would go. I've not prejudged it at this point, but I would say I think it's more likely than not that we will see momentum later this year and especially going into next year for an effort by the Republican House to try to do an impeachment. But right now, it does not sound like they have the votes to be able to pull this off. And even if they do, again, it becomes a question of how does this play out politically in 2024, when I think voters are looking to the Republicans to say, okay, tell us where you stand on reproductive rights. Tell us where you stand on the economy. Tell us where you stand on Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. It may not be a winning issue with the independent voters and the general public, But again, it might appeal to the base.
WPR will not facilitate that wager, David. You're on your own time on that one. Since we got you, just for another minute or so, expanded the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case, a couple new indictments related to allegations that President Trump, former President Trump by that point, ordered security tapes to be erased. Does this change much in terms of the wider investigation?
It adds additional charges. I think it now brings the charges against Donald Trump in that instance from 37 to 40. It's yet another obstruction of justice. It implicates another person in who was, I think, arraigned today, although that person didn't plead today because he didn't have an attorney. It probably doesn't significantly change the calculus down in the Florida investigation. It just adds more to it. But what I do think is a possibility is the fact that we now have another one of his subordinates, who's been charged. One always has to wonder at some point, will there be a plea deal with a lesser person? I can't remember what the person's title is now. And would this person now be willing to take a plea in terms of implicating Donald Trump? This becomes the complication. And then one other thing which has emerged is the fact that Donald Trump has raised quite a bit of money, but he spent nearly $40 million of his campaign funds on legal expenses. This is just going to be more legal expenses and more time that's diverted from him in terms of his campaign.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. And thank you to the audience.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's with us today to talk about the president's son, Hunter Biden, and the congressional and criminal investigations into his conduct.